This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is a first-timer with me, which does happen. Joe Pelluzzi is the founder and executive director of the Content Marketing Institute, author of three business bestsellers, the latest of which is Epic Content Marketing. Joe, welcome to the show.
Mark, thanks so much. Really a pleasure being with you.
I was reading through a lot of the jacket blurbs. We share some friends.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
People whose opinions I respect. How's that?
Oh, that's good. That's much better.
There you go. So let's start with a little bit of background on you. I'm surprised we didn't cross paths when you were at one of your positions. So start with your background, please.
Well, you know, I've been in the publishing industry for, it's hard to believe, over 15 years now, and started at a company called Penton Media, which still is, as far as I know, the largest independent business-to-business publisher in North America. And I ran their custom media unit. And basically what that means is that when somebody didn't want to pay for advertising in one of our niche publications that we had at Penton, they threw them over the fence to us, and we tried to sell them things like e-newsletters and blog posts and custom magazines and webinars and things where they actually had to create their own content. And we helped them create their own content and distribute that content. And it was sort of an unloved area of publishing for a long, long time, known as custom publishing or custom media, whatever you want to call it. And in 2007, I started on this path talking about the idea of content marketing and really naming it something different around marketing. And we've seen this growth in the area of brands creating and distributing their own content as a major portion of what they're trying to do to attract and retain customers. And so now it's just been fun watching businesses learn and use this muscle they haven't been using for quite some time. Even though the industry is, you know, over 100 years old, it's still a relatively new concept for a lot of people. So now I live and breathe content marketing and travel around the world talking about how businesses can, you know, create their own messaging and communicate valuable, relevant information on a consistent basis like publishers do. But instead of getting advertising and sponsorship support like publishers do, we're trying to sell more products and services around that content.
Okay. So when did you start the Content Marketing Institute?
Went through a couple, you know, a name change or two, but Content Marketing Institute was originally founded in 2007, actually April 2007, and it was three days after I left Penton Media, decided to take the entrepreneurial plunge and left Penton. And at the time, you know, I had two small kids at the time. They were 4 and 2. And it was a tough decision to make, but I felt like this was the right time. There is a right time, right? You either do it or you don't do it.
Right.
And decided to make that plunge. And then Content Marketing Institute didn't really take off. The whole concept of content marketing didn't really take off till 2010. And then it was just amazing to see the international support around that and, you know, all our events and magazine and everything else that we do now. But yeah, 2007 was the year, and I got, just a little side note, is I was probably within a six-month period of time about calling it quits. I mean, there was, in 2009, it wasn't, you know, the financial model wasn't working. I didn't think we could support the family anymore, and then we just had a little bit more patience, so it's just interesting. I talked to a lot of entrepreneurs about it. It's like, hold fast, be patient, you can make it, and we waited that 6 months, and it all turned around for us.
It does take persistence, just like content, you know. It's like space advertising. When you were with Penton, how many times would you have heard somebody say, "Oh, we tried space ads once," but it's not a one-time gig. You don't generate.
It's funny you say that with content. I mean, that's the one thing I say when somebody says, "Joe, why do content marketing programs fail? What's the biggest reason?" I said, "Because they stop. Somebody gave up. It's usually not because the content's not good enough. It's usually because somebody didn't have the patience and they thought, oh, 3 months, 6 months should be long enough. Well, it takes a long time to build a relationship with your audience with content. Sometimes it takes 18 months, 2 years. So same with a business, right? I was just at a business conference recently and the term was grit. They used and I love that term, the word grit. That's a really good word for entrepreneurs. You really just have to kind of push through it. And at some point, you're going to make it, but you just don't know when.
True grit.
True grit, absolutely.
In one form or another, custom publishing may have been unloved, but was it unloved by the industry or by the people who wanted to use it or both? I can kind of understand why the publishing industry would look askance at it, maybe treat it like a bastard child. But
yeah, I mean, actually, I would probably say all. I mean, the first thing is we've got to realize that the custom publishing as an industry is well over 100 years old. I mean, I use examples like John Deere and the Furrow magazine, which they launched in 1895, which is now distributed to over 1.5 million farmers around the world. But that's been going on for a long, long time. But what really happened is, you had mass media get in the way 50 or so years ago, and we forgot how to tell, engaging stories in the organization. So when we started working, when I was at Penton, when we started working with these companies, if we were trying to find somebody that oversaw content in an organization, they weren't even in the back corner. They were usually in the basement by the boiler, where you could find these people that oversaw content in an organization. Not really, they were working on the corporate magazine project, or that was the newsletter person. Wasn't integrated with anything else in the organization. So it took some time to get out of that and really search and social help with that. But on the publishing side, it was the same thing, Mark. I mean, it's not custom publishing or content marketing, whatever you want to call it, the service of it on the publishing side. It's not something that creates a multiple or an asset at a publishing organization, right? If somebody's going to buy you as a media company, they're going to pay a multiple on, oh, you have trade shows, you have website presence, you have assets that you own. Well, content marketing, custom publishing services, that's work for hire. That's just like an agency would do, and it creates lower multiples than a media operation would. So I've been involved in a couple of M&A acquisitions as it's gone, and it's funny, the custom content services within an organization are rarely valued at all when they look at the valuation of a publishing company. So it's like a throw-in. So it's just interesting on both sides. For a long time on both sides, it wasn't valued at all.
Okay. A lot of people still, our market here is business to government, so it's kind of an adjunct to B2B. A lot of people still don't get why content is important. So can you address that?
Well, I mean, there's quite a few reasons. First of all, it depends on what you're trying to do. So, I mean, content marketing isn't for everybody. So we just take the definition of what it is. So you are a business of some kind, and you're trying to attract an audience. Well, how are you going to attract that audience? You're going to create valuable, compelling, and hopefully relevant information on a consistent basis to have them do some sort of profitable behavior. So even on your government example, if you're targeting a government group, you're probably targeting, 6 to 8 different types of audiences in that organization. So what most businesses do is they try to create content that's good for all 8 of those audiences, and when you do that, it's not good for anybody. So we have to really focus on, okay, who is the decision maker? Who is the buyer? What are their pain points? What keeps them up at night? And then how can we create some kind of a relationship with them, because we're inundated with all this messaging. And the last thing I saw was over 10,000 different marketing messages a day coming from all different sources. I mean, how are we going to break through that clutter? Very hard to do that today. Now, you could advertise, harder than ever to advertise. It's also expensive, and you've got to turn that advertisement into some kind of an asset, some type of a sales hopefully as soon as you can, to show that there's some value there. I think if you look at content, see how people engage in content, where are they getting their sources from, right? They're getting it from search. They're going to search engines like Google. They're going to talking to friends on social media and whatnot. Maybe they're, you know, looking for real in-depth educational pieces on the web, whatever the case might be. That's your opportunity as a business to get in front of them and to create a relationship with them. It's not going to say, hey, you know, I'm available. I've got a great service. If you're just saying I've got a product or a service you can have, that's a very small portion of the buying cycle. There's all this upfront where a buyer is doing a bunch of searching. They're trying to figure out what the best source is and all that type of stuff. That's all that upfront about really educational, informational needs that publishing and media companies have usually filled that gap with. Well, today, Mark, there's no barriers to entry. There's absolutely not. Any company can go out and publish and target an audience that's available, that you can find them on the web in some way. And I think that's a huge, huge opportunity. Not even getting into the portion where we've converted a customer, Mark, and then we want to keep that customer loyal. And how do we do that? We can do that through a custom magazine, a newsletter, custom events, all sorts of different educational opportunities to keep those relationships going.
Okay. Let's pick this up on the other side of the break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Joe Polisi, author of Epic Content Marketing and the founder and executive director of the Content Marketing Institute. Is that the right phrase?
That's, you know what, as long as you call me, that sounds good to me.
There you go.
Yeah.
The book, by the way, is great. It's available everywhere. It is currently sitting atop the Amazon bestseller category and I think three or four different categories. So pick it up. Please, please pick it up and read it. Don't let it sit on your shelf. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Joe Polisi of the Content Marketing Institute. I believe the website is contentmarketinginstitute.com.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Right.
And the book, again, is Epic Content Marketing. I'm holding a well-thumbed and highlighted version in my hands, literally, as we speak. Real solid information. Stuff you can use. That's the kind of book that I really like. Stuff that whets my appetite and then shows me how to do it step by step. So, between takes, I mentioned that I have a theory on blogs, and pretty much it applies to any content, and that is if you give enough monkeys enough typewriters, pretty soon a sentence may occur. So not all content is created equal. How does one determine the quality of information that one produces and determine if it's ready for prime time?
Well, I don't know if you ever know it's going to be ready for prime time until you get out there, but I'll say a couple
Test.
Things about it. And this is what we know from the research that we've done at the Institute, is that the majority of businesses out there, in any industry, doesn't matter. You pick any industry, go across the vertical, and most businesses have no strategy for their content creation inside their organization. That's a problem right there. There's a problem. Before you even talk about execution, we don't know where the ship is heading. Again, I do speeches all over the world, as we talked about before, and I always ask the question, how many of you have some kind of a documented content marketing strategy? And the most I've ever seen is 30% of the hands go up. Most of the time, I'll see 10%. So when we wonder why there's a lack of effectiveness or people are struggling with content in the organization, there we've got a problem. But besides that, let's just say we've got a strategy. Okay, now what do we do? I think as you get out there, you've got to really think about a few things. First of all, is the content you're creating actually filling a need for your specific audience? And I'm talking about a niche audience. I'm not talking about that broad, oh, we're going to target consumers from 18 to 35 or whatever the case is. Like, I want to know who the person is, and I want to know what their needs are and what keeps them up at night and what their challenges are. And I want to know as much about them because that's what good writers do. That's what good content creators do. We know our audience. So then we can create something that's really going to fill their need. Unfortunately, Mark, what we've done historically is we filled that need with product information. It's like, oh, we're going to talk more about our products because that's what they want to know. No, they don't. I mean, the cardinal rule of content marketing is that your customers don't care about you, your products, or your services. They care about themselves. you've got to get their attention by caring about them a little bit by filling their needs. So that's one. Two is, got to be consistent, as we talked about. Most people just fall down. And even mediocre content can sometimes rise to the top if it's done consistently over time. The one thing I'm really adamant on is I think a lot of organizations try to describe value, but they're not creating value. I think a point of view is essential. Like, you have to have a take on something. You know, you're not telling the news necessarily. You're not telling the industry, describing the industry news. What you're doing is you're trying to solve a problem for your customers that doesn't necessarily talk about you, your products, or services. So I think those are just a couple things. Most of the content, I don't know about you, Mark, but most of the content I see coming out of organizations is so sales-driven. It's so like, oh, here's what we got, and here's a new product, and features, and widgets, and whatnot. And the fact is, yes, is that needed? Sure, about 1% to 2% of the time, but most of the time they don't care about it. So if we're spending all of our time talking about ourselves, nobody's going to want to spend any time with us. And I think social media and search is really showing us how, because you see so many companies struggling in social because they're like, well, we can't talk about ourselves anymore. We better come up with something super interesting, and we better do it on a consistent basis.
Well, you point that out in the book, that when you do something that's particularly salesy for CMI, that your readership drops by 75%. So, and the responses accordingly.
Absolutely.
Some of the companies out there, particularly when they're trying to leverage social media, LinkedIn is the one that I monitor most. They have a perpetual push product, push services, push sales mode going on, or push our own, you know, press releases. I have a mix that I use on LinkedIn. I do a lot of writing, so I like to put my own articles out there. I do a lot of speaking. I host my own events, but I try to maintain a 3 or 4 to 1 ratio of putting general focused news out there from other sources to one of my own. So as a result, usually the feedback that I get, I'd say 80-90% of the feedback I get is very positive. So
I think that's the right mix. I mean, we talk about this. Well, you see that in the book where we talk about the 4-1-1 social media model, mm-hmm. where let's say of 6 posts that you distribute on whatever social media channel that you're using, 4 of them are basically outside influencers, other media companies, other bloggers, other pieces of information that you're curating and presenting to your audience. 1 of those is your own, like blog or newsletter post or whatever the case, your piece of content marketing. And 1 could be a salesy piece. You know, you got a new product and you won customer service award of the year, something like that. But that tells you right off the bat, you know, 80 to 90% of the content is educational, but only about, you know, 20% of that total mix, 20, 30% is your content at all. And I think that we've got to get more in the mindset like a publisher would. Like if you go to any good magazine, they're citing sources from all over the place.
Yep.
And I think that's what makes that, you know, like you do, it brings that credibility to the forefront, is you really have to become an editor in a lot of cases so that you can say, yes, I do have an expertise. We are the leading expert in the world, and we're showing you this by the content we're creating.
Yeah, and, you know, that brings me kind of to my next point. When you're curating this other information, when you're pushing this other information, you're basically aggregating news from multiple sources. So, number one, you have to know some good sources. But some of the better newsletters that I've seen don't talk, you know, they don't create their own news. They will put out, you know, lists of 4 or 5 other stories from other sources, but they'll comment on them.
I love that. I absolutely love that, because it's not, I mean, you and I, but we talked about before, sometimes you have limited resources, let's be honest.
Yeah, and if
you don't have huge budgets like a Coca-Cola.
Right.
So, what are we going to do with that? Absolutely. What's your role? What need can you fill? And that's where we look at our audience and think, here's an opportunity. Here's a challenge our customers are having that is not being met very well. Maybe we can meet that. Maybe that can be our content marketing strategy for that particular audience. I think that's huge. And what I love about what you just said is they're not just aggregating and saying, oh, okay, here's a list of 10 links. They're giving some perspective. They're adding some value to the conversation. it's not, you're not spending all the time creating the content. You're spending all the time curating that content, giving it a point of view, giving it some relevance and some context. And that's a real value as well. And by the way, that's what a lot of publishers have been doing for a long, long time.
Yep. And let's migrate into the book for the remainder of the show, Ashley. I mean, you already mentioned the John Deere piece, the furrow. But you've got, you know, the Michelin Guide. I mean, that's a cool story.
I love the Michelin Guide story. Is fantastic. I mean, by the way, still produced today. Not as, I mean, that you could argue they could have done some things differently. But yeah, I mean, people needed, it's almost like the GPS of our time, where they needed to know, okay, how do I get around? Where do I go? You know, I'm traveling. Makes perfect sense, right, for Michelin Tire to offer this kind of service. And that's exactly what they did. And they've done it for over 100 years now and really put themselves on the map with something truly, truly useful. And I think that's where it was sort of a remarkable take, like John Deere's The Furrow, where they were saying, look, how do we create a relationship with these people? Let's give them something super, super useful. And it ended up paying off. And I think you can use, that's just a very simple way to go to market with a content strategy that can work for you.
Yeah, and you know, then you get a very consumer-oriented product like Jell-O.
And well, Jell-O is one of my favorite stories, just because of the fact that it went through a couple ownership changes. I mean, think about this. This is back in 1902. I mean, how do you market and sell Jell-O? I mean, today we have got 100 different types of yogurt, but we understand that, but this is the world we live in. Back then, the gelatinous, colorless, sometimes colorless substance, how do we market that? They didn't know how to do it. So went through a couple ownership changes, and they said, look, we've got to get this in the hands of the people. How do we do that? So they targeted different locations, and they went door-to-door giving away free recipe books. And those, you know, you could call it product play, half content marketing, half product placement, where they gave away all these wonderful recipes, helpful recipes of the day, of the time, and some of them had Jell-O in the ingredients. So they went to the local store when they could, and they went and picked out some Jell-O because they wanted to do whatever the Jell-O marmalade was of the month and try that out. And within the next year, they became a $1 million brand on their way to a multi-$1 billion brand. And it all started with giving away a free recipe book. So I just love that mentality of, you know, let's get it into the hands of the people, but let's do it through content. They just didn't give, oh, here's, try this Jell-O. They actually gave them something useful that would be useful without using Jell-O, but some of those recipes converted them to go to the store.
Okay. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. When we come back, we're going to talk about the difference between content marketing and social media marketing and much, much more. Back after these. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Joe Polizzi. Joe is the executive director of the Content Marketing Institute. They host a variety of events and conferences, so take a look, contentmarketinginstitute.com. Also, while you're online, migrate to Books A Million, Amazon, your favorite store, and pick up a copy of Epic Content Marketing. If you can't find it, you don't know how to type, but Joe's last name is Pulizzi, and it's not Joseph, it's Joe. So, and your parents may think otherwise, but whatever. So, in the book, you spend a fair amount of time differentiating between social media marketing and content marketing. What are the differences, and why is it important?
Well, the big difference, and I like to think of it this way. Let's say that you're looking at a magazine, and it's blank. The cover's blank. Everything's blank on the inside. Okay, you have a distribution vehicle. That's great. It's paper. You could mail it. You could give it to your customers, but there's nothing in it. There's no graphics. There's no words. There's no message. That's a problem, right? It's a magazine. It could carry the content, but it's not going to affect anybody because it's not saying anything. And I like to use that because if you think about social media, it's the same thing. A lot of people get content marketing and social media mixed up. And I say, well, social media, Lots of distribution channels for your content. And a lot of people have gone into Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and SlideShare and now Snapchat and all kinds of different social media channels. But if you don't have something interesting to say to put in that channel, it's not going to work very well, just like sending out a blank magazine to your customers. So it's interesting. And I mean, I have to say, Mark, social media has really helped content marketing, because what's happened is most businesses have gone in and they've experimented with social media, failed, feeling they fail miserably because they have no overall strategy for how they want to attack that channel and whether it's even a good channel for their audience. And then they back into, oh, okay, well, who's the audience we're trying to target? What are we going to say? How are we going to measure it? Like, are we trying to grow sales? Are we trying to save costs? Are we trying to create happier customers? I mean, what are we trying to do? So what's the tone of this thing? So all the things that a publisher or media company would ask before they go to market. So I think that's what I want the people listening to this to think about social media is, are you treating it like a channel like you would if you were sending out a magazine or a newsletter in the mail? And sometimes because we think that social media is free, we don't put enough time and resources into what the message should be.
So it's not dissimilar from a BPA audit form. Audience serve, and then you go down to the various industries serve, the people within those industries, job functions.
I'll tell you, this is an interesting story. This just happened about 6 months ago. So I was doing a small workshop, and there was the chief marketing officer of a very large gas station chain, and she was talking about they had 40 some odd thousand likes on Facebook. And she said, hey, we did a really good job getting the 40,000 likes, and we've sort of plateaued. And she said, Joe, I like this content marketing stuff you're talking about. How can we get more followers, get more people to like our Facebook page through a content marketing strategy? I said, that's a great question. I definitely want to talk about that. Let's have that conversation, but I need to ask you a question first. And she said, what? I said, well, why are you on Facebook? And just silence. And that's the... there was no strategy. She did not know what the overall business reason was for being on Facebook. Now, I know, we went and talked, and they have a loyalty program. And since most people that like their Facebook page are customers of theirs, there's a natural opportunity to work that into the loyalty program. So there was something right there, but they didn't have that documented. So I think that if we look at each channel, and I really recommend, talk about this in the book a little bit, about what's your why strategy for every channel you're in. So I want you to list every social media channel, every channel for that matter, that you're creating content for. And I want you to put a big why with a question mark at the top. And you need to answer from a business purpose standpoint why you're in that channel. Because maybe you don't know. Maybe you shouldn't be in those channels. But we've just run so fast to social media that a lot of us are now there for the wrong reason.
Well, and it seemed to be a race, to get those likes on Facebook, and when LinkedIn migrated to the click the endorsement thing, I had 230 written recommendations at that point. It took 2 days for me to get more endorsements than that. I mean, what's the point? And people were aggregating, just collecting anything that came down the pike. There was no reason for some of those things to even be on their profile.
No. I guess here's the thing that I would think about, and this is actually in light of the recent changes that Facebook has made. I mean, I don't know how much your audience is up on what's going on with Facebook, but more and more of the organic posts that you create as a business do not show up in people's feeds that like your page. So it's about 5% of what you send out right now on average is going to be seen by anybody that likes your page. And it's actually going to go down to zero. That's what we're expecting.
Holy
it means that Facebook
cow.
Has become a pay-to-play. I don't know if LinkedIn's going to go there. I don't know how the other social channels are going to work. But my advisement would be, and my warning would be, is don't build your content ship on rented land. Like, I really want you to focus on getting your own email subscribers, your own subscribers to your own content. Use your social channels to build relationships and to get those people back to the content on your site. Because the issue is, and not that you shouldn't use social media, I want you to definitely use social media. But at the end of the day, those connections, those friends, those fans, those followers you have on those social media channels are not owned by you. They're owned by Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. and they can shut off your access tomorrow. And as a publisher, as a media company that we're looking at content as an asset, I don't want to give another company that much power. So leverage it as much as you can, but remember at the end of the day, they can turn off the spigot tomorrow, and you won't have access to those people, and then it's going to become pay-to-play, and you got to figure out that strategy.
Well, I think ultimately most of the social media platforms will go there. I think LinkedIn will be slower to go there because they built in profitability on the front end. They're not trying to retrofit, so they can last longer that way. But, I was beta for publishing on my profile late last year, early this year. And I haven't posted much because in the back of my mind, that same question arises. Why am I writing here instead of my blog?
Well, it's a good point. I mean, I started out as, I love LinkedIn, by the way, big fan. And I'm a LinkedIn influencer. So I was led into that early program where I could publish on my LinkedIn profile.
Right.
And that's where you have to really think. Like, you're asking the right question, but what is the goal? So if your goal is to create more followers on LinkedIn, I don't think that's a good goal. I think what we should do is say, okay, how are we trying to convert those people over to my own e-newsletter sign up or our own content offer off page? I think that's the type of thing that we should think about instead of, because remember when we started in Facebook and LinkedIn, it was always like, keep them on that platform. You don't want to have them click off to another platform. I don't believe that anymore. I think we should get them on some other platform, and if we can get them as our own audience and steal audience from wherever they're at, I think that's what we need to do other than give another platform all that power.
Okay. Let's get started on the variety of formats content can take, because you spend, again, a fair amount of time on this as well.
I think that's the biggest chapter we have, the content types chapter.
Yeah. And certainly my favorite. So let's just run down the litany here. You start with blogs.
Well, I'm a big fan of a blog. And again, you don't want to get you're not familiar with the term or whatever. It's just basically you're writing consistently on the web, and it's accessible in search and social, and your customers can get to it easily. So it's a publishing platform. I really believe that there's three pillars that, I mean, depending on if you're an individual listening to this for your own thought leadership goals or whether you're a business listening to this, I think that you've always got to keep in mind, okay, do we have a blog, an industry-leading blog in some way that we're creating for our customers? Do we have an in-person component? Whether that could be personally public speaking or an in-person event, I believe it's critical. And then along with that, how are we looking at it from a print standpoint? And I know we're talking about digital, Mark, but I think we talk about this in types. As there's been so many companies that have been so focused on digital, we have this thing called the post office that still delivers, as far as I can tell.
Yep.
And there's a huge audience out there that's not getting near as much mail as they used to. And really, the mail they are getting, and you and I both get it, right? I get lots of worthless mail, the credit card stuff, whatever. Don't get a lot of useful mail. When I get a lot of useful mail, I pay attention to it. That's why I think there's an opportunity to look at sort of the three pillars of, okay, what are we doing digitally? And a blog could be the core of that. What are we doing in print? Do a print newsletter or magazine of some kind? And what about in person? We've got to have that face-to-face touch, and it can't just be about sales. So I think an in-person event, or if you're an individual, is to go out there and do regular speaking, I think is key, and I sort of look at that as the three legs of the stool.
Okay. We'll pick up more formats on content after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio with our guest, Joe Pelosi, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Joe Pelosi, the Executive Director of the Content Marketing Institute and the author of Epic Content Marketing, third book, first solo engagement. So, writing with other people, I'm not sure Ken Blanchard's ever written a book by himself, so you're still in good company.
I think the last 30 books that James Patterson's written, I think it's always been a ghostwriter or somebody else. So there's lots of different ways to do it, right?
There you go. Yeah. Let's talk a little more about some other forms of content. E-newsletters, white people think white papers are dead. Wrong.
No, nothing's dead. Well, you know what? It's funny. Whenever somebody says that something is dead, you can guarantee that it's not dead. I've already seen how many social media is dead posts have we seen, and social media just started, you know? So, I mean, of course, we've seen our fair share of content marketing is dead. I'm like, well, when did that happen? Yeah, I think what you want to do, I mean, when you get through your strategy, you know, right, go back to the beginning, right? We're talking, who is that specific audience? What's their pain points? What's keeping them up at night? What's our objective? All that stuff. And then we get down to, like, step 7, and that's the content types. Most companies start with content types. I just want to throw out the warning. Make sure you don't start there. Make sure you figure out what you're trying to do first. And then we can figure out, well, what's the best way to deliver that content? You know, we talked about the blog. You just mentioned e-newsletters. I think the low-hanging fruit model is to create a, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, if depending on how much you can, blog, updating it, and then you package it into a weekly or an every other week newsletter. Something that you get opt-in permission to keep in touch with your customers is critical. I'm a big fan of ebooks, and depending on where you're coming from, if you think of publishing, you'll think of ebooks like the Kindle, on that type of, reading it on your iPad. But what we look at ebooks is it's almost like a white paper on steroids or a sexy white paper, where instead of an old white paper, you had 8 to 12 pages of almost all type. Very formal writing. Now you've got an ebook that might be 30 to 40 pages. It's highly designed, not as many words on a page, a lot of infographics, very interesting. That's sort of the soup du jour these days of packaging that in. And to your point, white papers aren't dead, but I think that depending on what you're trying to do, maybe an ebook would be something that's interesting. And then, of course, we do research, Mark, that I think we looked at 24 different content types. You've got the ebooks, you've got podcasts, you've got, you know, all the different audio stuff, you've got videos today. So I think you need to take a thoughtful approach at what you're trying to do, what you like to do as an organization, what you're good at, what you have resources around, maybe what content do you already have that you can put together, instead of, let's say, okay, starting from scratch is something you don't like to do. Maybe there's something that really, really fits to start with, instead of just saying, oh, we've got to be doing videos. No, you don't. You don't have to be doing videos. Maybe there's something else that can really be helpful to your customers.
Well, in the video side, you know, if you have any member of your company that goes out and speaks, you know, shoot some footage. And if they do something good, then you've got a 30-second YouTube clip. But you don't need to go out and necessarily create something special.
Well, you know what? You make a great point. And this is just something that this is something fairly easy to do. That's another low-hanging fruit tip. Think about all the content you're creating in your organization now, right? Is your CEO going out and speaking? Do you have other people doing public speaking? How about, do you have small sales classes and teams put together? I mean, however you sell, however you go to market, where is there education going on that you are not tracking, that you are not recording, that you are not transcribing in some way? There is an opportunity, because basically we've got a treasure trove of content in our organization that we're just probably not getting our hands on. So once, to your point, what if every time the CEO did a town hall that we were able to record that, take pieces of it, maybe put blog posts together, put white papers together, put little video snippets together, all kinds of opportunities, but we say, oh, I wish we would have recorded that, or I wish we would have had pictures of it. I think that we just have to have somebody in our organization that has a nose for the story and can start to say, okay, we need to start thinking more like a media company and acting more like a media company and recording these things so we can build up our asset library so we have something that we can actually put content together with.
Yeah, I speak a lot, and my own fault for not having shot video of me speaking, because I think there are certainly nuggets there. What about articles for other publications?
I absolutely think that if you're not looking at guest posting, guest article creation on different platforms, you're missing a huge opportunity. So, like, what I would do flat out is I would say, ask yourself the question, where are my customers hanging out if they're not on my site? I'm assuming that whoever's listening to this, maybe you, you're not the end-all, be-all information source for your industry. So where are they hanging out? Where do they go? Do they go to media sites? Do they go to association sites? Do they go to other popular bloggers in your industry? Do they go to other government sites? Where do they go? You know, all those places, they're looking for really smart content. Maybe part of your content strategy, or maybe your content strategy at the end of the day, is to, I'm going to be a guest author on these different platforms. Now, we use that in conjunction with our own platform. So what we try to do, and we use it as a really good linking strategy as well, which, of course, is good for search engine optimization and getting found in Google, where I probably have done, shoot, Mark, it's probably over 500 guest articles on other platforms that I've done. This is over a seven-year period of time.
Sure, sure.
But it's a part of the strategy. I mean, I want to do shows like this. I want to go spread the word.
You want to be pervasive.
Because I get more people talking about content marketing. It's going to help us. So I would think about your influencer strategy. We talked about a little bit before with the 411. But I would absolutely list those places where your customers were hanging out. And I would look and see if there's an opportunity for you to create articles on that platform.
There you go. So, you know, we produce all this content. How do you measure the results?
So I'm gonna talk about, we've got a whole chapter of the book on it. It goes through a couple different methodologies, but I'm going to say a couple things. First of all, there are only three ways that you can measure content marketing. One is by sales. So are we growing revenue in some way? Two, are we saving costs in some way? So is it a better way to use our money in the organization than advertising? Or three, we call it sunshine. Sales, savings, or sunshine. Are we creating happier customers? So that's all about keeping customers loyal or them buying more or cross-selling or whatever the case is. So if you report to a VP of sales and marketing or chief marketing officer, that's all they care about. Like, yeah, it's really nice to show the Google Analytics, they're going up and to the right. Everybody likes up and to the right charts, right? It's like, oh, look, it's going up and to the right. It must be working. But at the end of the day, it's got to be sales, savings, or sunshine. So how do we do that? What's a metric that we can use? So there's no holy grail metric to getting this done, because we just mentioned there's three different ways to do it. There's a lot of different ways to get there. But I love the subscriber as a metric. Actually, having somebody opt into your content as the most important thing that we can do in our organization. Because what I can do, Mark, is I can say, that person has subscribed to my content. They've subscribed to my magazine. They subscribed to my newsletter. And over time, depending on how long your sales and buying cycle is, you can start to tell a difference between the person that subscribes to your content and somebody that doesn't, that you have in your sales database. So what I can start to look at, let's say that your sales cycle is 9 months and for you're selling to government. You know, it takes 9 months, 12 months. Sometimes it takes 2 years, right? It takes a long time. So we're talking about patience here. So we can say, okay, we had a subscriber sign up. Then we can put that against the customer database, and I can say, oh, this person actually buys more, or they stay five times longer. They're more loyal, or they buy these other products. Like, what makes them different? And that's why you can't tell that right off the bat. You can't tell that after 3 to 6 months. But after a full buying cycle has gone through, you can start to see these things. And that's why I love subscribers. The fact that you've created an asset, and then you can look at the difference between your customer database and actually see a difference in behavior. And that's what we're trying to get at with content.
Okay. So, you know, you once you start to build that subscriber base, Tell me, you know, how do you maintain this subscriber relationship?
Well, first of all, once you get that, I mean, you can use a lot of different things. A lot of people use marketing automation tools. You could just use a regular email tool that's out there. Whatever the case is, whatever marketing software you use, that's something to keep that database in. Then you have to communicate consistently, relevantly, with valuable information. And when I say consistently, I mean it. So let's say that somebody signs up for your e-newsletter, and you promise them, say, hey, we would like you to sign up for the e-newsletter. Why? Give them a good reason. Because there's 25,000 of your peers have signed up for it, and we're going to give you this exclusive ebook on, you know, reaching more people in your government marketplace, whatever the case is, right? Give them something of value, something for them to actually sign up. Then once you get them to sign up, then you have to deliver on that content promise, and you have to do it. So if you say you're going to deliver that newsletter every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time, Well, by golly, that's when you're going to deliver it. I'm not 10:05, not 9:55, at 10. And when you're going to be a publisher and publish exactly when you say you're going to publish. So what a lot of people do, a lot of businesses do, they're very inconsistent with their publishing. So they'll say, oh, sign up. You might not hear anything for 6 weeks. Or you get three sales messages right off the bat. And they're like, this is not what I wanted. Consistently deliver the content that you promised them over time. And you need multiple touches. I've talked with a number of organizations that say sometimes it takes at least 7 to 8 touches. Sometimes it takes 6 months. Sometimes it takes 12 months. You'll find that out once you see the data for you to see some kind of a behavior change. But my whole thing is keep that promise, deliver that content. And as we said before, Mark, that's where most companies fall down. They're really good at starting things. We could start a newsletter tomorrow. Actually delivering on that promise is the hard part.
There you go. Joe, thank you so much for joining me.
Mark, it's been a pleasure anytime, my friend.
Joe Polisi, author of Epic Content Marketing. You can get it any online bookstore, buy it at Amazon, improve his rating, keep his ratings up there. ContentMarketingInstitute.com, lots of events, lots of information. And content is king, boys and girls. It is important to generate this stuff and do so in a way that is pertinent to your market and, as Mr. Polisi says, consistent. So again, Joe, thank you so much. This is not my day job. LinkedIn has become an integral part of the government landscape. So if your company's not fully leveraging LinkedIn, we need to talk. We need to chat. So drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.